This is for the continuation of our conversation with John Schutz and for our Maximal Motivation members. John, we were talking a little bit about transitioning and that type of thing, hourly going to salaried. And one of the things that came to mind was a statement that I use a lot, and I do a lot of training myself in various areas for recruiting and that type of thing. And I think it's really a statement that is really important, and it's called the why before the how. And sometimes we get, when we're pursuing something, we get these backwards, and we start, you know, doing the how, meaning we take actions to do some certain things, but we don't know why we're doing the action, and we haven't solidified in our mind the why or the motivator behind that. And I just want to talk to you a little bit about that as well, in terms of maybe going from an hourly to a salaried employee. And the why, and figuring that out, so that they're being successful when they make that transition. Can you talk a little bit with regards to that?
Well, I think, you know, again, a lot of times when I would be working with, we would have a job opening, let's say a supervisor mm-hmm. job opening, and we would get a lot of folks from the floor that because they were in specific lead kind of positions, they just felt that there would be a natural transition into the next step, which would be a, you know, supervisor for them. And it wasn't necessarily because of the skill piece of it. It was more, you know, they wanted more money, or they felt that they were going to get more money in that position. They felt that, you know, they had the power then to influence people more. And you know, I think when if you go into a situation like that with the right mindset, and you do, you know, do some, you know, some thinking about why you want to go into a position, you know, what do you think are the areas that are going to improve by you going into that? How you feel that you can really make a difference in that position? You know, then if you're able to have a, you know, a thoughtful, you know, discussion with yourself, if you will, about that. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen, what's going to come out of that is you're going to start identifying, you know, how you're going to get to that. And, you know, I think, and there's a lot of different areas that factor into that. You know, it could be education. It could be, you know, just gaining more skills, you know, thorough knowledge about, you know, the business itself. Because as you move into a supervisory role, again, there's different kinds of demands that are put on that level in the organization, and you know, again, now you're responsible for everybody's, you know, safety and, you know, the overall quality coming off of all the lines instead of maybe just the line that you operated. So it, you know, the role becomes a little bit more dynamic.
Sure. You mentioned you touched on education just for a little bit. How important is education? I know that I, as a recruiter, I've worked with individuals that have said, well, you know, now I have my MBA, I should demand, you know, $20,000 or $30,000 more in the marketplace. Or I've had individuals that have been just finished their degree, and they said, now I have my degree, that should equate to, you know, a substantial increase in pay. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Well, I'll talk about the education piece first. Okay. You know, there's no doubt. Education opens doors. You know, it opens doors. It gives a person confidence in more confidence in their abilities. It, you know, allows you maybe to approach problem solving in a different way. You know, so there's no doubt that education is important. In saying that, though, I don't necessarily think that it's the end all either. I mean, it's definitely, you know, it's got to be part of the equation. But, you know, if people are willing to become, let's say, you know, a subject matter expert on their area or their line, or you have a person who is very good at, you know, the inventory control piece and ensuring that product is moving out of where it's supposed to, when it's supposed to, and the tracking of all that is done in a sufficient manner to satisfy all the, you know, accounting requirements and that. You know, again, you don't necessarily have to go to, you know, a secondary school or, you know, get your associate's degree, whatever it might be, to be really good at that and add a lot of value to the company. And, you know, I think that as you move up in an organization, it becomes more important. I think that most organizations now, as you move into the middle and definitely in senior management, the dynamics in the work environment have changed quite a bit over the years, and I feel that you know, without a specific degree, it's difficult for you to move up in organizations. It's not impossible.
Sure.
I mean, but you have to, you know, you would really have to be able to demonstrate the capabilities and demonstrate results, you know, over and over, and it may take you a little longer to get where you're looking to go.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen a situation where maybe an individual obtains a master's degree, for instance, and they change their perspective on their value, and where it's almost worked against them in a plant environment, where they said, well, you know, I have this master's degree, and I don't know if you have an example of that, you may or may not, but where they touted that in the conversations with management, well, I have my master's degree, you know, that type of thing. It might have been in a raise situation, that type of thing. Have you ever had that?
Absolutely. And you run into it, and I think you're going to run into it more and more. It's, you know, the thing that people need to be really careful of is the whole idea of entitlement. You worked really hard. There's no doubt you worked hard. You got your master's degree in whatever field, and it may warrant a pay increase. It may. But it also may not, because, again, companies pay for results. They don't pay for degrees. So if you've been in a position and you've been able to execute and demonstrate results over and over again, you know, the repeatable results, and you move from one area to an area outside of your main area of focus. You may move from, you know, inventory to warehouse management, or you may move from, you know, production to warehousing. And you, the key is being able to utilize those degrees to repeat good results. And mm-hmm. and if you do that, that's what's going to lead you to, you know, that next position or a little higher pay, or, you know, the type of things that you're looking for and hoping that achieving that degree is going to provide. Mm-hmm. But it's really, you know, again, having, you know, degrees behind your name really doesn't mean anything unless you can turn that into results.
Sure.
Because, as we all know, companies are about results.
Mm-hmm. Good. Let's go back on maybe the hourly. And I, you know, we certainly will have a number of individuals that are probably in an hourly fashion right now wanting to make that transition. They've done the why before the how. They know why they want to go to a salaried position. What are the hurdles that they will face in making that transition, going from an hourly, maybe the things that they will face within their peer group? What are some things that can help them be successful in making that transition to the salaried, to deal with some of the emotions that take place, deal with some of the challenges in terms of a different ballgame when you're in the management side and being responsible at a different level? Could you address some of that for us, John?
Sure. You know, I personally feel that managing through people is going to be the biggest transition. You know, when you're working on the floor, you're working with a bunch of other folks on the floor to, you know, put product in a bag or product in a box, whatever it might be. I think when you move to the next level, what you have to be able to do is now manage that total workforce to accomplish that. And, you know, typically it can be fairly difficult because, again, at one day you were a peer and you're all, you know, you're having lunch together and, you know, you're going out for a beer after work together or whatever it might be. And the next day you're having to, you know, talk to folks about, you know, their productivity. You're having to talk to them about, you know, hitting, you know, the quality expectations if that's not being done. You know, there's different kinds of discussions that have to be held, and that's usually pretty difficult for people, especially when you're talking about people having to go back to people that you were a peer with, you know, days, weeks, months earlier. And, mm-hmm. you know, so, you know, working through that, and to me, that's where, you know, the manager of that person moving into that position is really critical. It's not a situation where you can just say, okay, you're a supervisor today, go out and supervise. There has to be, you know, daily interaction with that supervisor. You know, essentially, you know what I've done in the past is set up, you know, a senior supervisor to mentor. You may put that supervisor on a different shift or have them, you know, shadow a more senior supervisor that has the quality skill sets that you're looking for, just so they get a better idea. So you're not just throwing people into, you know, the fire, if you will. You know, you're allowing them to transition in, you're allowing them to witness some of the skill sets from a different perspective, because when you're on the floor, I don't feel that you are paying as close of attention. But when you're put in the spotlight and now you know that you have to, you know, manage differently, you know, a good supervisor, a good potential candidate moving up in the organization is going to be, you know, looking at every little thing, watching what people say, watching how they say it, watching their body language, and hopefully developing, you know, taking the good points and developing their own style that's going to be conducive to driving results with the team that they're going to be managing.
Mm-hmm. There's certainly challenges, and I think there's a lot of emotions that factor into that. When you leave your peer group, so to speak, not talking negative like at all when we say that, but there is a separation that does take place, like you mentioned. There's a lot of emotion that goes into that, and I think it's really important to discuss that. Now, we're not trying to dissuade anybody from going from an hourly to a salary, not by any means, but I think the preparation mentally for that and the ability to interact with your immediate supervisor and work through some of that, I think, is going to be critical to the success of the individual. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely agree. I think along with that, you know, you do have to set your own goal for the department, and I think that's where, again, the manager needs to make sure, and you need to be aligned with you know, your department goals, but there you have to be willing to set specific goals that you and your team are going to try to achieve. And it could be something as simple as, you know what, I want to have the cleanest warehouse floor, you know, in all of the company. Or I want to make sure that, you know, my little area that I'm responsible for doesn't have a safety incident, you know, over the next 3 month period. You know, you need to start establishing goals with your people. And again, you know, if you've worked with the folks before, you probably have a pretty good idea what they can and can't do or should be able to do. And again, starting to get a different kind of buy-in with them at a different level. And I think that, as, again, what works for higher level employees, I think a lot of times you can use those same dynamics to work for, you know, folks that are in the supervisory role or middle management role. I think mm-hmm. that, you know, establishing those goals, that vision that you have, and then helping people achieve that, you know, and most of the time it's through hands-on. I mean, the last mm-hmm. thing that people want to see is, you know, for a supervisor manager just sitting back and saying, okay, well, you know, do this. This is what I expect. And if you don't, well, you know, then we'll have some discussion. You know, no, there has to be hands-on, you know, this is what I think. What do you think? That back-and-forth conversation to figure out mm-hmm. how, you know, the steps that you're going to take to achieve the specific goal, you know, in your area that you've agreed upon.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things, I developed a leadership series within Direction Motivation as well that addresses some of the things we're talking about too. And I think in a workplace, the majority, by and large, really want to do a good job. They truly do. And it's helping them and giving them the tools for them to be successful, whether they're, you know, the operator that's been on the you know, working that machine for 15 years or whatever, giving them the tools to be even better and taking an active interest like you're talking about, very, very key.
Yeah, and I think one of the other key things too, Russ, is to make sure that you identify those people that, you know what, aren't interested. I mean, that they mm-hmm. want to come in and they're more than happy, you know, doing the same job day after day and, that's what they like to do. And I think it's important that, that, you know, they may have great skills, and you may look at them and say, boy, you know, I would love to have this person, you know, move into this position or come over and help with this. They have no interest in that. Mm-hmm. Again, you don't give up on those people by any stretch. You keep trying to, you know, convince them of the value that they're adding and how they could, you know, enhance the organization by adding value and helping other people, you know, with their skill sets. And some people will, you know, sort of come over after a while, and others just, they just don't have an interest in that. But they still add value to the organization. So you have to make sure that you're not, you know, sort of segregating them out and saying, okay, you know, well, I'm just not going to pay attention to you. You know, you're just, you know, your XYZ position, and that's where you're always going to be. So I'm going to focus my attention over here. It's, and, you know, that can be a real detrimental signal to send to the folks on the lines.
Sure. Well, great managers see value in every employee. It doesn't make any difference what level they're at, and recognizing them for their contribution. And I think, you know, another thing that companies are doing more of, and I've been asked as a recruiter to get involved in this and some of the training side, too, that we're doing is taking those operators like you're talking about that have very good skill sets and putting them into a position that's just a little bit of higher authority. They might be a senior operator where they have three or four operators that they actually mentor underneath them. They're not a true supervisor, but they're giving very, very good advice, because what's happening in America is we have companies where they have individuals that have been with them 20, 30, 40 years. Those people are retiring now, and that information, which is so vital, is walking out the door, and they need people that can step up and fill that gap. Just one little step up, not going necessarily to the supervisor role, but being a leader, and they're willing to pay for this type of individual that will take on a little bit more responsibility. So the opportunities, really, even though you might be an hourly, they're there.
Yes, I agree. And, you know, one of the keys with that, Russ, is making sure that you've identified that those folks can train people, because there's a lot of folks, you know, I've come across that, boy, oh boy, they are just, they are the expert on their line. But when you get them to try to help someone else and you know, pass on some of that knowledge that they have in regards to how equipment runs best or whatever it might be, a maintenance mechanic troubleshooting a line, you know, they're just not very good at that. And that's where it's really important for you as a leader to identify that ahead of time and see if you can, you know, develop some tools or expose them to some training techniques, whatever it might be, to help them be able to train better. And, you know, I think that's critical to make sure that a process like that is successful.
Sure. Unfortunately, perfection sometimes can have its drawbacks, right?
Yeah.
They can be a perfectionist with their machine, but that doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to transfer that to someone else. John, just kind of wrap up here. You know, you've definitely risen in your career. What are some of the characteristics that you feel have been all that have made you successful over the years, and what has made some of the people that you have directed successful?
That's a good question. You know, some of the things that I look at is you have to have integrity. You know, again, when you're working with people, you know, having the integrity, being honest, following through on what you say is really important. You know, the whole idea of being able to communicate and listen and execute and you know, just following up with employees, that's what they're looking for. You know, I've had numerous situations where, you know, employees would come to me with ideas, you know, whether it be to improve productivity or, you know, if we change this little thing on the line or, you know, this little thing in the pack out area, you know, we can, you know, gain, you know, 3 cases an hour, you know, whatever it might be. And acknowledging, as a leader, it's important for us to acknowledge those ideas, all ideas, as good ideas. I mean, again, there's not a bad idea. Some may work, some may not. But the signal that you want to send to employees is that you want them to keep coming to you with ideas. And in doing that, you need to make sure that you're executing some of those ideas. And I don't necessarily mean management executing them. You know, I can, on most occasions, what happens is that I say, okay, you know, work with the maintenance mechanics, work with your supervisor, but I want you to drive that change. You know, come back to me and let me know what you think it's going to cost. You know, do some studies of the process change. Come back to me, and then let's, as a group, we'll decide if we want to move forward from a financial perspective. And a lot of times what you find out is that for a very small, you know, amount of money, you know, you can make changes on the lines that are going to drive, you know, some pretty major efficiency gains. You know, so I think, you know, making sure that you're listening, you know, making sure that, you know, you're providing the tools for people to be successful, showing an interest, you know, that you want them to succeed. You know, and that's not just from a professional standpoint. There may be personal things. You know, they may want to run a marathon. They may want to, you know, go on a bike race and be successful. Again, engaging employees in those kind of conversations, you know, brings them closer. And I'm not saying you have to have a super personal relationship with every employee, but you need to show interest in all aspects of their lives. And it's great to know, you know, what their wife's name is, or boyfriend's name, or whatever it might be, the names of their kids, you know, so when you're talking to them, you can say, you know, so how is so-and-so, you know, how is their soccer season, you know, whatever it might be. And, you know, to me, the more interest you take in an employee's, you know, just daily lives in regards to, you know, mostly the profession, again, I mean, we have to say mostly the professional piece, the more interest they're going to have in providing results and helping you push, you know, your vision, helping you push to achieve your goals. And, you know, again, that's some of the biggest things, you know, listening and following up with employees, because they watch that. They watch it like a hawk. And the first time that you don't, you know, they're going to start questioning, what your motives are. You know, again, you want to get out of the mentality or get it out of their heads that, you know, there's management and there's labor. Because mm-hmm. if you really want to move a facility forward, and when you talk about the whole change management type of discussion, it's about, you know, eliminating those barriers between the groups, at least in my estimation it is. And every step that you can take to knock a little chip out of that wall and create that doorway, you know, you're just one step closer to really achieving the kind of work environment that I think everybody likes to work in.
Mm-hmm. Very good. You know, I'm maybe going to end on this and talk about the value of mentors. You know, we've talked, mentioned this several times in our conversation, mentoring and that type of thing. When you look at someone starting out in their career, let's say they're coming from maybe right out of college. How important is a mentor? How do they find a mentor? How do they know how to select the right mentor that they can put their trust into? That type of thing.
Well, I think mentors are very important in the progression throughout your career, and I think it's important as you move through your career that you develop different mentors. You know, I look at myself, you know, I've had some great mentors over my career so far. And, you know, again, a lot of them are subject matter experts. My last position in regards to, you know, logistics was, you know, my boss and his direct, you know, the senior VP was you know, if you had a question about something in logistics, or if you wanted to figure out, you know, what were the new and innovative ideas that were coming down the road, you knew that you could go ask them. And you know, so in establishing a mentor, I think it's really important that you know, first of all, take a little time. I mean, you don't want to just come into a position and say, okay, I want a mentor. I think what you need to do is, you know, do a little surveying of the field first, You know, and you know, watch and listen and try to interact with as many people as you can at different levels. You know, again, a new supervisor just coming into an organization, you know, you're going to have a lot of contact with your direct manager, and hopefully you're going to have a fair amount of contact with, you know, if the next level up is plant manager, the plant manager. You know, again, but I think early on in your career, you know, you're looking for the basics. You're looking for an individual and I would say in your next level up, and trying to establish some, you know, a relationship with somebody that has the characteristics that you feel are really going to help you be successful. And it doesn't necessarily have to be in the area. I mean, actually, I would encourage it in the beginning to be in the area that you're in. If you came in as a warehouse supervisor, I would suggest that you look at someone in that field as your mentor. But as you move up into an organization and you gain different skill sets, it's going to be really important that you diversify out a little bit and get the perspective of, you know, I had the VP of global food safety as a mentor, and again, it was you know, not an area that, you know, I don't necessarily ever want to go into quality, but it gave me a whole different perspective on the type of processes that level needs to go through to you know, keep the organization from a food safety perspective safe, and you know the different kind of dynamics that they work through to ensure that. And again, all that, what a mentor helps you to do is round out, I think, as you diversify a little bit in your mentors, to round out your experience and helps you create your overall knowledge base and broaden that. You know, I think that's really important as you move up. Plus, it's all part of the networking. Again, you can learn from everybody. And, you know, that's where it's also really important to, as you're working with mentors, you know, come in there with an agenda. You know, don't just come in there and think that you're going to just sit down and chit-chat. Have some specific areas that you want to talk about. Something that may have happened on the floor the day before. You know, go through an example of how you handled it and try to get some advice back from that mentor of you know, areas that they can advise you on in regards to how they may have handled it different. Or they may come back and say, no, you know, I think you did a really good job. You know, just, you know, work on this as you, you know, in the next time you have the conversation. It's making sure that when you're meeting with a mentor, it's value time. It's not just chit-chatting about, you know, what went on the floor. It's, no, you come in with very specific ideas of what you want to learn that day, because for the most part, you know, those folks are giving up their time and to help you in your career, you know, help you succeed and help you achieve your career goals. So you need to make sure that you know, you're cognizant of that and respect that.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the points that you made about taking your time to select your mentor is really a key thing. And I think what I mean by that is looking to see in the political landscape what others, how much value they put on that person as well. They might be very knowledgeable, but if within the organization, if they don't really carry the weight, so to speak, they're maybe not the best mentor for you. And you might, I don't know if you agree with that or not, but what are your thoughts on something like that?
Yeah, I think that's important. And really that probably is more important as you move up in an organization. And I think early on, you're looking to get the perspective because, you know, you're green. You know, so you're just coming out of college and you really don't have the experience. So what you need to do is be able to start formulating your own, you know, good and bad list in regards to, you know, these are characteristics that I really like in this person. Here's some that I don't necessarily feel I want to emulate, you know, in my daily interactions with my people. You know, for myself, Russ, I'm a watcher of people. You know, when I'm sitting in meetings, I'm watching people. I watch their body language. I watch how they interact with other people. You know, it's something that you can learn in every situation you're in. And I've really found that to be beneficial in regards to, you know, characteristics that I like and, you know, responses that I liked, responses that I wasn't so fond of. and thought, you know what, I need to remember, I don't want to come across that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that, and again, for me, since I was a mentor to, you know, lots of people, I think as you do that, it really, you get to the point where it doesn't really matter if people are your mentor, if you're their mentor. You know, I've had numerous conversations with people after meetings just saying, hey, you know, I just want to bring this up. You know, here's how it sort of came across. You know, you may want to just watch it, watch how you interact, or watch your tone or your body language, because here's the message that I received.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think, you know, as a, you know, when you look at, you know, a leader, you know, those are important areas that you need to be comfortable in addressing with the team, because ultimately the team is going to either sink or swim together.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's important that everybody at every level tries to help their teammates get better. And that's really the role of a mentor too, is to help an employee get better at what they're doing.
Isn't it very, you know, having mentored as much as you have, isn't it rewarding to watch the people that you've mentored grow?
Oh, that's the best. I mean, that is really what drives me in my career right now. I just love watching people grow. I love it when, you know, you followed specific steps and you've talked to people over and over about different things, and you see them implementing, you know, ideas, or you see them, you know, following some of the thoughts that you had, and then, you know, you get to the point where a position opens somewhere in the organization, and their name comes up and they're selected, and it's just like, yeah, you know what, I did my job. Because the way I look at it is that when I lose an employee, when I have to, you know, make the tough call on an employee and not have them work with the company anymore, it's a failure on my part. Because there's some, I just, that's the way I feel. And right, wrong, or indifferent, I take that somewhat personally, and, you know, I try to reevaluate, you know, what are the things that I could have done different to try to influence a different outcome on this. Sometimes you can't, you know, sometimes it's just going to be the way it is. But I think in a lot of regards, there's things that management can do to avoid those type of tough situations. And if, you know, if it's identifying that an employee is in the wrong role, you know, a lot of times, you know, we make moves with people because we think this is where they would be good. We think that we would like them there, you know, all the other reasons, and we put them in there, and, you know, I don't want to say they're failures, but they're not succeeding at the level they were in their previous position. So, you know, it's really important to make sure that we're, you know, evaluating that prior to making those kind of moves, because, you know, when you lose an employee, it's a sad thing.
Sure.
For everybody involved.
Yep, definitely. Well, John, I really appreciate you taking time today to talk with us. It's been a pleasure, absolute pleasure. I love, this is the types of things that I love to hear when it talks about development and growth of individuals. That's what directional motivation is all about. And we really enjoy you sharing, or really appreciate you sharing your thoughts today on that.
Well, again, I appreciate the invitation to come and contribute. And if there's anything in the future you need, you know how to get a hold of me.
Okay. Sounds good, John. Thank you.
Thanks, Russ.